Hi, listeners. I'm your host, Rebecca Kelly, and welcome back to The Station, a fiction podcast about a girl named Ida. Now, Ida's trapped on board a failing space station called the Delta, and she's making a last desperate attempt to escape before the Delta falls into the atmosphere. If you're new here, welcome. This podcast is me reading my novel, The Station, chapter by chapter. The book is available on Amazon as an ebook or a paperback. And if you're interested, I run a very active Bookstagram page on Instagram. So follow me there to keep up with my latest content. So back to the story. Ida's finally ready to leave the Delta behind. She's made all the necessary repairs to her escape ship, a Russian Soyuz capsule, and she and her station robot Nix are about to undock from the Delta and begin the journey of re-entry. But, as we all know is the case, things don't unfold easily in space. So let's jump back into the story with chapters 45, 46, and 47 of The Station. At 4:37 a.m., Ale jumped straight up in his bed as his alarm buzzed on the bedside table next to his ear. He had been in the middle of a deep dream, and the alarm, set for 4:30, had been going off for 7 minutes without even a flicker of wakefulness reaching his brain. What exactly he was dreaming about, he couldn't remember, but he knew Ida was there in her dreams. Sweat beads crawled down his neck and onto his bare back. He was breathing hard, almost panting. This wasn't a good dream, he realized. And it didn't surprise him, because this was a common theme lately. It seemed as though his mind was testing his resolve, preparing him for some unfortunate incident yet to come. Something's wrong, he muttered to himself in a whisper. The alarm continued to buzz on the nightstand for a few seconds before he came back to reality. He rubbed his eyes, grabbed the alarm, and hit the snooze button before dropping his head back down on the pillow. He flung the sheets off him to bring some fresh air to his clammy skin. He needed a shower. Slowly, Ale rolled over the edge of the bed and landed on his feet, steadying himself and stretching his arms up over his head, pulling the stiffness out of his body. Without another thought about the dream, he walked toward the bathroom door. Later that morning, Ale switched on the comm link to the Soyuz. With static crackling in his ear, he said, "Good morning, Ida. How are things on board the Soyuz?" "Great," she said. "Things are great on the Soyuz. And yes, I did actually get a decent night of sleep, although I don't believe you showed up anywhere in my dreams. I could be wrong about that, though. You never know." Ale laughed, and a big smile spread across his face. Secretly, his heart fluttered, and the blood warmed in his veins. "Well, let's get this thing moving, shall we? Did you go through all the pre-checks last night? From the readouts I have, everything looks green." "Yep, it's all done," she said. "How are you feeling?" he asked. He didn't have any idea how he would be feeling in the same situation, but he was pretty sure he wouldn't handle it nearly as well as she was. "I'm fine," she said, her voice choked and short. He knew right away that this wasn't the case, but he decided not to push the issue. She had her own ways of dealing with things, and he'd become accustomed to her attitude twists. "All right," he said. "Since we're all in a brilliant mood this morning, let's get this hatch closed." As he started to run through the hatch closing procedures with her, he was suddenly struck by that strange feeling he'd felt when he woke from that dream, the feeling that something wasn't right. "Hold on one sec," he told her as he pulled up a different tile on his holoscreen. The feeling wasn't something he could have described, even if he'd wanted to. It was the sort of feeling you get right before a big drop of spaghetti sauce falls on your white shirt. It happens in slow motion, and you do your best to get out of the way, but you can't move quite fast enough to avoid it. And then, splat! Just as Ale pulled up the tile he was looking for, the proximity alarm started sounding. Chapter 46. "Whoa," I say, as the spacecraft shifts around me in sudden, jerking movements. Alarms start to buzz on the computers all around me, first on the screen that's still connected to the main Delta computer, and then on the Soyuz computers, too. I pull up the alarm on a screen tile and lean in to read what's going on. Something has hit the station. This happens fairly regularly, but I've never felt an impact this close before, or one this large. In that instance, I felt the shudder as the station walls absorbed the impact. It's funny how an impact in space reverberates. The force moves like a wave through the metal. The wave moves fast, so you don't really see it, but it seems like it's in slow motion when you're inside listening to the metal bend and change. An impact kicks up a smell, too, like something burning in a sauté pan. It's the smell of the vacuum, which is worrisome because the smell of vacuum is not a good thing to have when you're inside a pressurized spacecraft. That's definitely what's happening here because I can smell it now. Nix, what do you think? I turn to him. Nix is linked wirelessly to the station computers, and he has access to the data too. There must have been an impact, he says, as if he's adding some serious analysis to the conversation. I nod at him and say, "Well, the air isn't rushing out of this place. Let's get out of the Soyuz and see what happened." I pull myself through the hatch into the docking module just in time to feel the second impact, and then the third. Again, the walls shudder as the impact waves move through the interior panels, and I can see that the docking module and the service module are moving around independently of each other, putting a lot of torque on the tunnel between them. Once I get into the service module, I pull up the primary holoscreen bank and run a full ship scan, pulling up separate tiles to give the status of each of the modules and all of the primary life support systems. "Shouldn't you confer with NASA?" Nix asks. "Oh my God, you're right," I say. I totally forgot that the comm link I had in my ear inside the Soyuz was specific to that. When I yanked it out of my ear to go back into the Delta, I didn't transfer the feed to the Delta comm system. I pull up another tile on the screen to configure the bud in my ear, and almost immediately I hear Ale's voice practically screaming from the other end. "Space debris! The sensors are going wild! Ida, where are you?" "Did you miss me?" I ask him, knowing that he's probably not in the mood for jokes. "Ida, you scared me nearly half to death. I mean, really, that was scary. We got all these systems alarms, and there were these loud noises, and you disappeared. I'm just..." He pauses, and a little smile cracks my lips, hearing his concern. "I'm just glad to hear your voice. Give me a second. I'm going to go around the room here and get some answers." I continue to check the systems on my screen, and after about 10 minutes of back and forth and system readouts, we all agree that there were three pieces of debris, each about 25 centimeters in diameter, that struck the docking module, just above where the Soyuz was docked. Since the engines are toast, moving the Delta to avoid debris hasn't been an option. Because of this, nobody was actually monitoring for large pieces, or they would have caught these little space rocks coming in for a head-on collision. After a few more minutes of checking the systems, they tell me that it's okay to get back into the Soyuz, which wasn't hit, thank God. Nix and I load back up into the Soyuz and start turning things on again, right where we left off the first time. Hopefully, nothing more will go wrong. Chapter 47. Ali hiked his legs up on the desk in his office and loosened the knot on his tie. He'd contemplated wearing jeans today, but opted instead to wear a sleek blue tie and matching tailored jacket. It was appropriate to dress professionally today, he thought, considering the magnitude of what they were about to do. Ida was in the middle of a long string of commands to get the Soyuz systems ready for hatch closing, giving Ali about 10 minutes of downtime before they actually began closing up the hatch and detaching from the Delta. Although he thought about sticking around the command center, he wanted to catch his breath alone for a few minutes. He was trying to get a grip on his frazzled nerves. Luck hadn't been on their side. The debris hits couldn't have come at a worse time. They'd had to reset their timeline, losing about an hour, to make sure there were no structural damages to the Soyuz. A day earlier, two of the engineers detected a malfunction in the station's gyroscopes. The gyros, they call them, were responsible for minor orientation movements of the station. They played a more critical role in slowing the drag on the station since the engine quit working. The gyro malfunction had caused a swift decline in altitude, even sharper than they'd anticipated, before they could get the gyros working properly again. That would have been a big problem if they weren't prepared to leave today. Because of this, the Soyuz undocking had to go perfectly. They couldn't afford to wait another day. The station was on a collision course for the atmosphere. As much as he tried to relax and purge his mind of thoughts about the station, the last thought The thought of Ida burning up in the atmosphere made Ale double over in his seat. He dropped his head between his knees in an effort to keep his insides on the inside and took 5 sharp, deep breaths. When he felt his heart rate slow and his stomach settle, he stood and left the room without bothering to close the door behind him. "What happened?" Ale asked, his face twisted in a look of total disbelief. Tess stood behind Yuri's seat in the conference room, the tip of her index finger planted solidly in her mouth. Yuri spoke swift Russian into his phone. Tess turned to him, her face tense and her eyes narrowed. "The latches won't release," she said. They had Ida close the inner hatch on the station from the outside. Then she closed the Soyuz hatch. "But now the computer detects a low seal quality and it won't release the hooks. It's a safety precaution to keep the station and the departing station during undocking." "Yuri," Ale began, but he stopped speaking when Yuri lifted his index finger to indicate he was not done with his phone call. Ale flushed with anger and clenched his jaw, but waited patiently for the gruff Russian to finish. After another minute, Yuri hung up and turned to Ale. "It has something to do with the alignment of the ship," he said. "The debris strikes moved things around and compromised the connection between the two ships." "What are the options?" Ale asked. "That's what I'm finding out," Yuri said. "I talked with a fellow Soyuz expert in Moscow, and they're going to send me the plans for the latch hook system. I'll find out more in just a few minutes." Ale turned to Tess and asked, "Does she know what's going on?" Tess nodded. "She's the one who told us first. She's going to troubleshoot it herself and see if she can figure it out. Sounds like we may need to bypass the computer on this and open the latches manually." "Manually?" Ale asked. "Yes, manually," Tess repeated, and then with a sharp, sideways smile, she added, "Ida's planning on kicking it." "Oh, great," Ale said, rolling his eyes. "That's all we need, is her kicking something loose and losing pressure in both ships." He plopped down in his seat and put his earpiece in. "Ida, are you there?" he asked. "Mentally or physically?" she replied. "You know the answer to where I am physically, but mentally, I'm on a beach somewhere watching the waves settle into the sand." "Well, I'm glad to see your sense of humor is holding up," he said, smiling at the sarcasm. "Let's get to work on troubleshooting this problem."
Thanks for listening, sci-fi fans. Join me for the next episode when we find out how Ale and Ida decide to deal with their undocking problem. See you then. Bye.